That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That Money Show on FUBAR Radio. I am Gabriel, the host today, also known as That Money Guy. Makes sense, That Money Show, That Money Guy. And I have one very simple objective for you today. And that is, in roughly 1 hour, when this lovely little show comes to a close, I will have made you better with your money. Sounds good? Sounds like a fair deal? Well, then stick around and I will follow through with that guarantee. How am I going to do that here, you ask? Well, we have an incredible show for you today. As per usual, I love discussing the news, because normally the news is boring, and I actually agree with you on that sentiment. But when it comes to this show, what we do is we cherry pick the stories that are relevant to the money in your back pocket, and we get you up to date, up to speed with that news, so that you can, you know, firstly, flex your financial knowledge with all of your friends and show them that you know exactly what's going on in the world and the economy and the market. But secondly, and more importantly, you are up to date with the changes happening within our economy here in the UK that actually affect your money. So you are as prepared as possible. And then, of course, we like to bring in some incredible guests, guests from all around the world, financial experts, entrepreneurs, and all kind of personalities to get you to understand money from different experiences and different perspectives. So stick around, because we've got some great guests. But like I said, we always start things off with the news. So what is happening in the news right now? Well, number one is some great news for everyone. Inflation. Over the past 3 years, you've probably had inflation as one of the words written in red with the kind of like symbols around it saying, I do not want to hear anything about inflation whatsoever, because it's been so high. But actually, right now, inflation is at an all-time low for over 3.5 years. So where are we at? What number is it? 1.7%. That is below the Bank of England's target rate of 2%. So in the month of September, so 1 year, year on year, September to September, prices, it says inflation fell. So inflation, the number has dropped 1.7%, but that means prices only rose by 1.7%. Like I said earlier, the Bank of England's goal is to try and hit 2%, or try and keep things steady at 2%. But in this case, in this scenario, 1.7% is our number. Now, I think in the grand scheme of things, this is a good thing. And let me explain why. Well, inflation's been so high. I mean, we've literally seen numbers above 11% back in, I think it was 2021 now, that getting things back to normality and even having inflation figures come in below what people are expecting is probably a good thing. We need the rise of things and stuff that we try and buy, goods and services, to slow down a little bit. So this 1.7% a number with, I'm very, very happy with. And not just that, the Bank of England are coming together in November to decide about what the interest rate is going to be set at. So currently it was 5.25% a few months ago. They dropped it to 5%. And this is the interest rate that affects things like the saving rates in the market and mortgages and all other kinds of things in that level. But they are coming together again in November to make another decision. And I think society as a whole would like to start to see that 5% number start to come down more and more. And what this inflation rate, this low inflation rate, is going to do for us, it's going to hopefully make the Bank of England lean more towards making that decision to drop interest rates again by, well, at least another 0.25% down to 4.75%. So that is kind of the reason why I believe it's a good thing. It just kind of makes things feel like they're going back to normal. But it is important to say, by the way, that a 1.7% inflation rate still does mean that the price of things are 1.7% higher than they were 12 months ago. Capiche? Yeah, we're still going up. And not just that, those crazy high interest rates that we had 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, are baked into the prices of things that we're paying for today. So we haven't had any deflation where, for example, the price of, I don't know, milk has gone down. But what's actually happened is the rate at which it's increasing has slowed down. Okay? That makes sense? So we're still going up in price, just not as quickly. So like we said, this is hopefully going to be a good thing. So when the Bank of England come together in November, they decide to lower the interest rates again, especially for people that are struggling with borrowing. So mortgage owners, for example, this will be very, very, very welcome news. What else is going on? Well, shoppers who use buy now, pay later, you might have heard of it, BNPL, things like Klarna and other competitors of the such. Well, there is going to be some regulation coming in. When is this regulation coming in? 2026. Yeah, that's right. There is regulation coming in. It's just not coming in for over 12 months. Not quite sure why it's going to take so long for this to actually happen, but it is what it is. Listen, beggars can't be choosers. And I think everyone within the financial world has been begging for some level of regulation to come into buy now, pay later schemes. And I'll explain why in just a second. So the fact that it's coming in 2026, yes, it could be sooner, but at least it's coming in the first place. But what you have to understand is I believe that over the past 12 months, 14 million people in the UK have used Buy Now, Pay Later. Buy Now, Pay Later, of course, is the scheme that allows you to buy the classic things in your life. I don't know, you go into Zara and you want to buy something for £100. They allow you to spread those costs out over 3 months at 0% interest. So you feel like it's kind of like free in a way, and it's sensible to spread out those costs. But here's the downside. If you do use Buy Now, Pay Later, you are four times more likely to get into debt, to miss a payment, to miss bills, and obviously impact your credit score. And not just obviously impact your credit score, just to get you into a bad financial position, because debt is never ideal. We should always be doing things to avoid debt. That's why I personally try to avoid Buy Now, Pay Later. I understand why people use it. It makes things a little bit more affordable. It takes the stress off some purchases. But I would much, much rather you created your own version of Buy Now, Pay Later, where instead of spreading the cost of something you want to buy right now over 4 months, why don't you save up over 4 months and then buy it properly when you can actually afford it? I think it should be called Buy Later, Pay Now. We're getting there. I think maybe I'll work on the exact name for my scheme. But from a financial perspective, it's a much more secure way of doing things. But listen, back to the news story where regulation is coming in. What it's essentially going to do is it's going to become as an affordability check. Can you actually afford the Buy Now, Pay Later scheme that you are kind of signing yourself up to? Because like we said, the reason why people use them in the first place is because it spreads the costs out, it lowers the burden. But a lot of people are using Buy Now, Pay Later because they can't afford the full price of the item, but they can if they spread it out over 4 months, which is why I think bringing in affordability checks is a welcome thing, because ultimately you really shouldn't be buying things that you can't afford. And Buy Now, Pay Later incentivize people to do exactly that. What will the regulation do beyond affordability checks? It will also give people that buy things with Buy Now, Pay Later accessibility to Section 75 of the Consumer Act, which is a brilliant thing, by the way. It just means that if you pay for something that costs over £100 using Buy Now, Pay Later, and it turns up to your house and it's not as described, Buy Now, Pay Later, the service that you use for the Buy Now, Pay Later, are jointly liable with the store to pay you back your money. So they will have to pay you back the money and then chase it down from the store. So you see what we're doing? We're doing some nice, good news stories, things that actually affect your money. Because, I mean, 14 million people using Buy Now, Pay Later means that the majority of you, well, not the majority, but a large amount of you listening to the show probably used it. But like I said, why do Buy Now, Pay Later? Try Buy Later, Pay Now. Again, working on the name. We'll get there. And lastly, a little story on investing. Women, Gen Z, and millennials are leading the drive for investing here in the UK, overtaking the rest of Europe, as people apparently are seeking higher average returns than their savings. So let's take a little bit of the numbers of how many of you lot apparently are starting to get into investing, which I'm a big, big fan of. Investing is quite literally for everyone. I'm a firm believer in that. Investing has a place for everyone. It's not just for the rich. It's not just for the financially astute, the people that know all the intricacies of how to manage their money. If you are saving money, full stop, investing should be on your radar. Because what is investing for ultimately is for your long-term savings. Yes, it gives a bit of element of risk, but higher risk, higher reward, and we mitigate some of that risk with long-term investing. I'm going down a little bit of a rabbit hole. Let's take a look at what's going on in this news story. Well, some of the numbers that I have in front of me is that some 3.5 million people have taken into investing in the past year in the UK alone. So what's that? Like 4-ish percent of the population have got into investing this year? Not bad. That's a total of 11 million having begun investing in Europe overall. So out of the 11 million in Europe, 3.5 million coming in from the UK. There is a 30% more 25 to 34 year olds have started to invest over the past 12 months. In Europe, that drops down to 13%. So 30% in the UK, 13% in Europe. Get in there. We're doing well so far. And also, the number of those in the UK aged between 18 and 25 who started investing has grown by 16%. So literally, from as young as you can start investing, which is 18 years old, that number is increasing by 13%. I'm hoping that a lot of those people may or may not have potentially watched some of our content, listened to that money show, and gotten into investing off the back of it because they've understood how to mitigate risk. They've understood the long-term and practical benefits, and they've understood that it's better to get started than to stick around and try and figure out everything perfectly before you get started. And here's an incredible statistic. It is that there is a 32% increase in female investors in the UK over the past year. Now, I've done a lot of work with a lot of charities that have shown that there is a real gender gap when it comes to financial knowledge and financial acting when it comes to different financial services, investing being one of them. But we've had them on the show as well, some incredible female-founded communities that positively enforce females to try and get into investing, to understand that it is accessible for all. And that number, 32% increase in female investors in the last year alone, is an incredible statistic and one that we should be really proud of here in this country, and all the support from the various communities that are helping women get into investing. One more for you. Gen Z millennial investors account for just under a third of all UK investors. Big up. I am a, Zillennial? I think I'm a Zillennial. So by mathematics and science, I am Gen Z because I was born in July 1997. Sorry if that kind of has whipped away the facade of how old people thought I am. But I identify as a millennial because my first phone was a Nokia brick and I did play Snake on it. So I'm kind of in both of those. And yes, I am part of the statistic. I am an investor. But I would love to get that 28% of UK investors up way, way higher. I was actually on a panel working with Barclays this week. And here's a crazy statistic that they came out with. It was that currently they estimate there is £450 billion worth of money sat in UK bank accounts that probably could be used for investing. And that is money where people have beyond 6 months worth of savings. You know, they've got themselves in a really good position. They've got savings, they've got emergency funds built up, and then they've just got this extra money sitting around. Well, apparently that extra money sums up to £450 billion that could go into investing. And that's across something like 13 million different accounts. So there's still a really long way to go with investing within this country, but I'm really happy these statistics show that we are heading in the right direction. So if everyone would like to stick around for this short little break coming up, because straight after, I'm going to have Noah Brielli on the line, a financial influencer, to help you get better with your money.
FUBAR Radio. Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think you said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, that's, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some free videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You wanna go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, and I am joined by the one and only Noah X Bower on socials, Noah Brielli, the guy that knows everything when it comes to young people, financial education, side hustles, you name it. This guy discusses it and it has the most incredible social media presence. So if you haven't checked him out, do that right now. But Noah, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm amazing, man. It's good to be here.
It's always great. You know, I love having conversations with you around all things money. And I'm going to test you a little bit. I want to kind of get your thoughts on this, because we've got a budget coming around in, let me just take a look at my watch for the date. I think it's in 9 days exactly until Rachel Reeves comes out, tells us all about the tax changes, the different things that are going on in our economy, and just generally probably worsens the entire economy because taxes are likely to go up, full stop. I think the first thing I'd love to hear about kind of your knowledge from your audience about, are you seeing an increased engagement from young people in not just wanting to understand more about their own money, but genuinely trying to learn more about the economy, full stop?
Yes, I think generally the idea of taxes tends to scare off young people and they think, oh, it doesn't really apply to me. But I think actually a lot more young people nowadays, thanks to people like me and you, people creating content online, they're trying to break down taxes in a more easy to understand way. I think young people are becoming more aware. And there's also been all that stuff out, particularly around those who sell on Vinted or eBay or Depop, the resellers. That idea of tax has actually started to become a real thing. You know, as well, there's this whole wave of teenagers who are getting into side hustles, and then suddenly they're thinking, oh, actually, do I need to pay tax? Do I not? So I think, yeah, young people are generally becoming more interested in taxes. However, there is a long way to go, and I don't think school teaches enough about how taxes work. I have a friend, he's just started making a good bit of income, maybe around like 2k a month, and he's straight out of school with his side hustle. And the other day I was talking to him and I was like, you know, you've got to start putting away some of that for taxes, right? And he was like, what? So yeah,
I mean, I think this is a perfect time for young people that are listening to be like, taxes, what do I need to know about taxes? Like, to kind of, let's have a little bit of a back and forth about the various types of taxes that you're most commonly gonna kind of approach as a young person. So like, obviously number one, income tax. What's the biggest mistake that people probably make you hear when it comes to income tax?
Oh, there are a lot of mistakes when it comes to income tax. A lot of people, they're worried that if they earn over a certain bracket of money that takes them into a higher percentage of tax, that they're actually going to lose money. So that's a big mistake. Also, a lot of people aren't, like, it's really stupid, but I try and help a lot of young people get jobs and stuff. But often, like, their employers are miscalculating their taxes, which is kind of stupid. And my granddad, for a good few months of his life, his employer was miscalculating his taxes. And it turned out by the time that he retired,
he actually owed the government money.
Oh,
and
God.
Can I just tell you, right? He worked in a job which was for the army, basically part of the government, and the government were calculating his taxes wrongly. So I think with income tax, you just need to know a little bit, the very basics of just actually, is my paycheck right? Because sometimes your employers will mess that up for you.
Absolutely. And do you want to know why that's so important? So obviously the main kinds of taxes you get as an employee is national insurance and income tax. They're just like two different versions of income tax, let's be honest. But it's actually your responsibility. It's not your employer's responsibility to make sure that you're on the right tax code, to make sure that you're paying the right tax. It's the individual's responsibility. So it is important to make sure you're on the right tax code. Things are coming through smoothly. Of course, you expect if you've got an HR department that they can help you sort and make sure everything's right. But like when you do start a job for the first time, pick up your phone to HR, have a conversation with them through the various taxes. You'll probably have maybe student loan on there as well, and to understand how that's coming out of your paycheck, make sure you're on the right plan, because it's your responsibility. And if you're paying it wrong, HMRC aren't coming after your employer, they're coming after you. Like with your grandpa, probably found out, it was ultimately his responsibility to pay that money back.
It was. He didn't have anything that he could do. He just had to pay back the money. So they put him on a payment plan. So it breaks my heart, because he was working, you know, a very sort of average job, hustling for the country. And yet the country, when push came to shove, he had to pay the taxes back. But another thing, Gabriel, as well about taxes that I'd love to get your take on this. But I'm a big advocate for young people. And I actually think that I've heard certain people talk about the idea of actually maybe for some young people, shouldn't it be a good idea that their first like 50K or 100K isn't taxed, because that gives them a little boost. Maybe they could then help save up for a deposit or something. But even on that level, like me running a limited company, and I know young people are getting into starting businesses, I think again, like VAT, the threshold where you have to start charging VAT, it needs to be a lot higher, because I think the government needs to do more to actually support startup young entrepreneurs like people that I try to help through my page.
Yeah, I think what you're saying probably sounds quite radical to anyone in the government that's probably listening. But one of my questions was to you is like, what kind of policies would you like to see in the budget? What changes would you like to see? Now, this is a really interesting conversation point about, should there be a specific kind of tax policy that helps young people's burden when it comes, you know, putting into life. Firstly, they're going to be some of the lowest earners in society as a young person, right? You're coming in at entry-level roles, low salaries, theoretically your lowest earning potential that you'll ever be at. Hopefully it goes up and up from there. So in terms of their actual tax contributions to society, they're probably not that much. But what it is to them as an individual is probably a huge burden when, let's say, for example, you know, the average salary in the UK, £35,000, £36,000, the actual take-home of that is £28,000, £29,000. Now, you're talking about basically removing somewhere in the region of 20-ish percent of someone's entire income. Now, imagine if they could have that 20% back. But now here's the rule that I would say. Right. They can have it back, but it has to go towards savings. It has to go towards pension. It has to go towards long-term investments. Or it has to go into kind of like some kind of self-investment through a business, something like that. And I don't know how we would manage that. And obviously the intricacies are for the government. But what do you take on that as a good idea for Rachel Reeves to come out with next week?
That would be so interesting. I don't know if there's any way they could guarantee this, but I would add something to that. Maybe they, you know, you get some of that back or whatever, but you have to put it towards, it could be like a side hustle or something like that, something to start your own business on the side as well as your job, or just investing into some sort of pension or something. It's a really solid idea. Like people have played with the idea as well of like, maybe the government should charge us a little bit too much money for taxes, and then maybe like a year goes by and then they will refund us some of that money. And that could be a good way to sort of get people thinking, actually, oh, I've got this boost of money. What could I do with that money? I think Rory Sutherland has talked about that idea, which is interesting. I still don't quite understand it, but I think it could work.
You're going to have to work on it before you present it to the government pretty soon. All right. So let's take a little dive into what the predictions or what some of the rumours are around the budget next week. And then I would love to kind of take any thoughts that you have on them. So It's all about tax rises, apparently. This is what's coming for us, because there's a £22 billion black hole in the budget. Rachel Reeves needs to find an extra £22 billion. How does she find it? By tax increases. And apparently a lot of the things that she's looking at include increasing inheritance tax, which is... The truth is, apparently only 4% of the country pay inheritance tax because of how high it is right now. But it's still one of the most unpopular taxes when polled because of how high it is. It's something like 40% when you go over the threshold of £350,000. So you can hand over £350,000. Then after that, you have to actually pay 40% of anything you have above that, which, you know, it's like I've worked my whole life, you know, to build up this massive pot of money that I can pass on to my family, and then the government take 40% of it. Additionally, capital gains tax is another one. So that's the idea of, you know, if you are a little bit of a hustler and you buy something, you hold it, you know, buying and selling, basically, and you're doing it outside of a company, you buy it, or whether it's a property, you want to get into property, or whether it's through investments and you want to do some buying and selling. Increasing capital gains tax, so the profit you make, or maybe kind of what the threshold is when you have to start paying tax, a bit of an increase in that. And the last one is an interesting one. So she promised not to increase national insurance, which, like I said, is just another basically form of income tax. But there are reports that she might be increasing the national insurance contributions that a company has to make on behalf of their employees. So right now, the individual that works for a company has to pay national insurance as part of their tax. I think it's like 8% as the lower threshold if you're a lower income taxpayer. And then, of course, the company also have to pay a percentage of what they pay you on top of that as national insurance from their side. Now, there's an idea that companies might start to, they might increase the amount of national insurance that companies are paying. Why would they do this? Because obviously they promised not to increase the national insurance from an employee's side. So they kind of get away with that one by charging the company and not the individual. But there is this thought that when you start to increase the tax on how much a company has to pay for each person that they hire, companies are going to be less likely to hire. It's going to reduce stimulation of the economy. They're going to, you know, start to reduce other benefits for employees because, you know, they have to pay more for every single employee they hire. So that one in particular, I'd love to kind of hear your take on what you think about that.
I think with that national insurance thing, when I read through the manifestos, I got this vibe from Labour that, okay, because I am an employer, right? I have people actually on payroll for my small business. And like, you'd think, yeah, cool, there's going to be no increase in national insurance for us. But it's that sneaky wording, isn't it, of actually, okay, but actually the employers have to pay more. And the truth is, like, employers, they are... you know, with cash flow, with trying to stay competitive and actually bring in employees. And these days, you've got to be offering more to employees because employees want more, okay? And to then have that rise, you know, on the one hand, I get it because I love the NHS and I think it needs to be funded better. But I also kind of feel like we need some sort of radical rejig of the NHS and maybe adding some more sort of psychological ways of making the NHS better. So on the national insurance front, I just think it's one of those things where, yeah, inevitably we all knew with COVID and everything happening, yes, it's going to go up and it's going to go up somehow. And I'm not surprised. The government is the government, right? They're always going to find the way to charge us more. but when it comes to inheritance tax too, I really, again, right, I'm probably like most of the polls, I really don't like it. Because I think if they just charged a lower rate overall, maybe some people would be more willing to actually pay that inheritance tax. Because I know for a fact my grandpa, he's got like 30 houses, but obviously he's reaching towards an older age. He's been selling off his houses and doing some perfectly legal but very clever ways to avoid paying that inheritance tax by gifting the properties earlier on, to trying to do it a certain amount of years before he dies, so then he can avoid the inheritance tax, right? Yeah. But ultimately, right, if I see I'm building something generationally for my children, for my family, I want them to be able to have that. And I know a lot of people who have built some stuff, and then they're like, okay, the government's going to take a big piece of this. Let me go and put this in a different format. And then capital gains tax, I think you need to make it simple, because I think there's a lot of confusion right now, okay? And I'd say if you make it a lower rate, That would be good because it would encourage more people to start trading, buying stuff, and it will put less people off, especially young people who are stopping doing the Vinted reselling and the Depop reselling and the eBay reselling because they're worried about taxes and you don't want it to put people off.
I like it. Basically, the government are struggling between this idea of stimulating the economy and raising funds, which is, I'm glad it's their issue and not mine, but ultimately I think, yeah, it's going to be a sticky one, but you're going to have to stay tuned and keep coming back to That Money Show to find out what actually happens in the budget. Of course, you can also just look on the news, but That Money Show is the place to come find out. Noah, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you as always. And people, go and check out, where can they find you?
At Noah X Boa on TikTok and Instagram. See you there.
Amazing. Thank you, Noah.
Cheers.
All right. It's my favorite part of the show. It's time for Money Tip of the Week. And this is a big one, okay? I'm going to stare right down the camera. Money Tip of the Week. It's about a month away until Black Friday, and it's about 2 months until Christmas. This is officially your warning to get yourself into a good position when it comes to being prepared for those sales. What we don't want is you scrolling on websites on the day that the sales happen to try and find something that's a good deal. Build your list up now, understand what the prices are now, start tracking the prices now so that when the sales come along on Black Friday and heading up towards Christmas, you know exactly what you are buying and if it is a good deal. That way you are prepared, you know you want it, and you know you are saving money. Don't be one of those people that panic on Black Friday and just, you know, have a little scroll, buy something here, buy something there, and then realize they've blown their budget without even realizing. There you go. That's Money Tip of the Week for you. Anyway, stick around because coming up straight after this short break is Julianne Panon, the founder of Creative Nature.
Fubar Radio. Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
The Fubar Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, that's, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey. You know what I mean?
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You
no,
go, you go there.
Yeah, we're going there. Access All Areas, mate.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show, live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel Nussbaum, That Money Guy. And I am joined now for a really interesting interview. You're going to want to stick around for this with Julianne, the founder of Creative Nature. Julianne, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Really happy to be on the show. So, yeah.
Very, very excited to have you. So I want to kick off, some people might recognise you, I believe, from Dragon's Den, if that's correct. So do you want to tell us the story of how a business owner finds themselves on Dragon's Den?
Yeah, I guess so. Dragon's Den seems quite a while ago now. But yes, we were on Dragon's Den. I guess my story starts with my own personal experience with allergies. So I suffer severely with anaphylaxis. So I'm allergic to peanuts, tree nuts, sesame. I'm that person on the plane when they say, please don't eat nuts.
Gotcha.
And yeah, I've made a business out of it. I want to be able to make the world a safer place for people with allergies like me, so that no one has to be in intensive care having faced an allergic reaction. Gotcha. And we took our business onto Dragon's Den and pitched the dragons. And heard their wrath and their grilling, but we came out with an offer. However, we turned it down.
Ooh, I like this. That's a great spicy intro for the business. We came out with an offer and we turned it down. So I am going to ask you a lot more about your business because I find it super interesting, and also just the general aspect of, you know, going from someone with an idea, a passion, and actually turning it into a physical reality. But, I mean, you gave us the little sprinkle that you turned something down. So are you happy to share a little bit more details about who you turned down and why?
Yeah, it was Deborah Meaden. She's absolutely phenomenal as well. So we really wanted her on board. It was one of the hardest decisions I think I had to make quite early on in the business. But at the time, we were set to launch in Sainsbury's. It was one of the big supermarkets. However, we didn't have like a physical purchase order. We just had sort of confirmation that we were going live, and that wasn't good enough at the time. And from that, the valuation, the company was valued lower than I would have wanted. So instead, when I said no, I remember my mum and dad going, what are you doing? Like, why do you want to say no? But yes, I believe that was the right decision to make. And Deb was an absolutely fantastic sort of pioneer for women in business as well. So it was sad, but she was really friendly about it all.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, like you said, it would have been an incredible opportunity, but if it doesn't feel right in your gut, right, you've trusted your gut that far to build the business full stop, so you had to continue trusting it there. So if the numbers weren't there, the numbers weren't there. Was that a big kind of like hurdle you had to cross in your business? Did that change anything for you when it came to growing your business?
I think it changed things when the episode aired, because obviously from the time of filming to actually when the episode airs, there is a couple of months, sometimes even longer, but ours was around a couple of months. And when it did air, that's when I just didn't expect to sell out in every single store we were in. Within sort of 3 days, we had no more stock.
Amazing.
Which was fantastic because it was a sentiment to the product and our customer. But then a year later from that, I decided to actually do a crowdfunding campaign. So raise money from seeders. So go out to angels, and you can invest from £10 all the way up to sort of hundreds of thousands. And we did that, and we went on the site, and I was really scared of pushing go because I just didn't know what was going to happen. I'd lined up a certain amount of investment, as I think with seeders, you need to understand you need to make sure you've got investment ready to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And when I pressed live, I think it only took us around 14 days and we had raised nearly £500,000.
Wow.
So at a £6 million valuation at that time. So it was a big difference to the den. But it was really exciting and it really propelled the business forward. And I had hundreds of brand ambassadors then from that as well.
That is phenomenal. Now, I know a lot of people listening are like, can we find out more about the business now? Because I think we've kind of teased a lot with the story of how your business has grown, the crowdfunding, the Dragon's Den aspect, the selling out when the episode released, all incredible things. But I want to find out more about the business. So creative nature, like you mentioned, were built off the back of your own experiences with allergies, intense allergies and quite severe ones. But can we find out a little bit more about the company, what they do and why you decided to, I suppose, go from a passion and idea into a reality?
Definitely. It's our mission. So I live and breathe it. It's as authentic as you can get. I've been in intensive care from literally shaking someone's hand who's eating peanuts and touching my face and come up with a severe reaction. We do a range of products. So I always wanted every child to be feel included. So every child or adult, whatever age they are, we should all be able to sit around the same table and eat the same food. So all our products are top 14 allergen free. So whether you have gluten allergy, dairy, nuts, sesame, all of that you're catered for with no may-contains. Now, this is a big problem today, with 1 in 12 children now having a food allergy and 30% of them having multiple food allergies. That's 2 in every classroom. It's getting worse. And I think there needs to be companies out there making an inclusive environment so everyone can enjoy. I'm really tired of seeing every time I go to a store and then turning around the back of pack and it says may contain nuts, mm-hmm. may contain dairy. It really is quite difficult, especially as how can you take that risk? Could it contain a little bit or could it contain a lot? So we do a range of baking mixes. So from the banana bread that was baked throughout lockdown to brownie and pancake mixes to snacking. And we also supply people like Virgin Atlantic, so Iberia, on all their flights with our snack bars and sort of our take on a vegan chocolate ball.
Incredible. And I love that, because a lot of why I believe businesses succeed or don't succeed is sometimes obviously there has to be passion and has to be a good idea, but the story behind your business is probably one of the coolest things that is quite unique compared to a lot of people that I talk to. Like you said, like what you're not just selling a product. The story behind the product is what's going to resonate with so many people, and not just make them want to buy your product once, but want to make them become like super fans of your product, and not just try one thing, but try everything that you've got to offer. And like you said, I suppose to a lot of people, they might not be able to resonate so much because they haven't gone through those experiences. But like, again, you mentioned the statistics of the number of people that do resonate and have had those experiences and are constantly trying to navigate a world that maybe doesn't cater for them just quite so kindly as it should. This, they'll hear your business for the first time, they'll go like, that clicks. That is exactly what I've been looking for, which is incredible. So you've grown a business, and like that in and of itself deserves an applause. What advice or tips would you have to aspiring entrepreneurs that have the idea, have the passion, but want to get to the stage you are today?
I think it's all about starting. I know this sounds really simple, but a lot of people come to me because I mentor for Virgin Startup and a lot of other places. They say, well, how do I, like, when's the right time to leave my full-time job? Or when's the right time to start a business? What should I do? Should I wait till it's perfected? Well, actually, no, I don't think you should. I think it's all about getting that feedback from that customer, that trial and error. So for me, I remember our first packaging, it was awful, by the way. It was done on paint.
Not even Canva.
Not even Canva. And yeah, we went out to Kingston High Street, we sampled the product, we got feedback, and at the beginning people didn't like the product. But it's all about understanding that consumer. Who are you targeting? And really getting to grips with that. And as you grow and as you make small tweaks, week by week, you're going to be ahead of where you were, ahead of that person that said, oh no, I can't, I have to wait till it's perfect. Because nothing ever is really perfect in a changing world. You're always going to have to keep changing things and keep tweaking to make things better.
I really like that. And to add to what you said about the people that say, should I quit my job and do this? Well, I always ask, well, where are you up to right now? They'll be like, oh, I've got an idea. Why are you quitting your job? You've got evenings, you've got weekends. If you are truly passionate about this, that is the time that you need to prove to yourself that you want to launch yourself into this as a career. And only then, once you've kind of grown it and the risk is actually quantifiable, should you be even considering it. But you should always, always build something with that safety and security net on the side. And I understand that some people are all or nothing, but I think that the middle ground is becoming more and more accessible to more people today. So that's normally what I say. What would you say to an earlier version of yourself? Because that piece of advice, just start, is something that you actually did, because you did just start. You ended up taking the leap and giving it a go. But were there any mistakes along the way that you would change differently with hindsight?
I would say be more confident. I think a lot of people face imposter syndrome when they're an entrepreneur. And yes, we are winging it. And yes, there are new things and new challenges that we face every single day. And it's just about when you make a decision, you do make it with conviction, but it took me a lot longer and I would question myself over and over and over again. But actually, if I had that confidence, if I told my younger self, I'd been like, don't be too hard on yourself, just go for it and try it. And you can always sort of ask forgiveness later.
Ask forgiveness other instead of asking for permission, right?
Permission.
Yes. That's really strong. And I think the last thing that I would love to ask you is about how you've managed to grow a business but maintain, because you have a really strong brand identity. And I think that a lot of brands lose identities as they grow and more opportunities come knocking. So how have you maintained your identity with your original mission whilst continuing to strive for growth, which I think most business owners are constantly striving for?
In a way, I think for me, I call the allergies the superpower in the way. So because I live and breathe it, comes back to every decision you make. And I think when you decide on your mission and your ethos, whatever team you employ, as new people come on board, it needs to, like this thin thread that goes through absolutely everyone, so everyone understands and is aligned with your mission. And it's going back to that every time. So every time you make a decision in the business, does that accomplish your mission? Is it part of the longer term strategy, or is it a quick win? That way it keeps you all aligned and everything goes down this sort of one track funnel. Whereas if you're going off in so many different directions, you're taking that scattergun approach and you're not coming back to that one key vision and mission that you should be all aligned to.
Julianne, honestly, your advice and your expertise is so clear to see. So where can people find a little bit more about you and your journey, potentially on social media, and B, where can people try your stuff?
Definitely. Well, I'll have to send you some, so you'll have to try some.
Yes, please.
But you can find me on Instagram, Julianne Ponan, Creative Nature, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And you can get our new baking mixes as well in Tesco's, Asda, Sainsbury's, and across some of the airlines as well.
Amazing. Julianne, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Well, there you go. For those of you that have allergies out there, I really hope that that interview hit really hard for you. And for those of you that don't, I really also hope that interview hit really hard, because that was one of the best examples that I've ever interviewed of someone with a real identity, a passion, and a story that runs through a business. And I think that businesses that succeed more and more these days, especially ones that are using social media, are succeeding because of the stories that are kind of underlying the entire business. So always, yeah, think of that one word, story, when you are building your business, because I think that'll be a real indicator of success of a lot of businesses we see in the future. So scam of the week. Scam of the week is where I warn you about scams rather than try and scam you live on the show. I'll give you an example of a scam. When I was younger, I used to hate vegetables. I'd hate all vegetables, you know, carrots, turnips, you name them. I absolutely despised vegetables. But I was scammed by my mum because she blended them and put them into a soup. So there you go. That's what a scam basically is. And what's the scam that I want to warn you about? Well, you know that passcode that you get sent by someone when you're trying to log into an account, especially banks, where they get like, it's called like OTPs, one-time passwords, where you get a text to your phone with a number. Scammers apparently are picking up on this more and more and more because we trust those one-time passwords. But normally when you get sent them underneath, it says something along the lines of, we will never ask you for this one-time password. Do not share it with even the bank, the company you are logging in with, okay? This is just for you, your eyes and your knowledge. I don't know how, but scammers are convincing us to share that information with them. And that's a really important password because to the bank, that proves you are you. But once you have shared that information with someone who is a scammer or a fraudster, they can use that that number, that password, to do a lot of damage to yourself. So remember to follow the rules, especially if it says it in the text, that if you are asked to give that number, it is probably going to be a scam. They normally say on them, we will never ask you to share that number. Please follow that advice. It is a scam if they're asking you for it. And that's on the rise right now. So just be aware of that one, a really good one. And that is Scam of the Week, where we make you aware of scams like eating vegetables rather than trying to scam you on the show. Now, it is time for audience questions. The chance where you have DM'd us on at That Money Show on Instagram with some of the best, the stupidest, the cleverest, the most simple, the most complex questions to try and catch me out. But more importantly, because it's a safe and anonymous place for you to get answers to the things about money that you have always wanted to know. And this week, we've got a few brilliant questions. So Aaron's coming with quite a long one. Bear with me, because it's going to take me a while to read it, and it's going to take me 7 seconds to answer it. Aaron's asked this. I recently purchased some goods from a UK electronics retailer and paid for these through a BNPL finance agreement. Straight away, Aaron, we talked about this. We don't like BNPL. Well, we don't mind BNPL, but like, don't use it. I've decided that I no longer want these goods and have asked, I've requested an RMA from the retailer, basically a refund. I'm aware that I have 14 days in which to return these goods and cancel the credit agreement, but I'm struggling to find any explicit terminology related to the deposit paid for these goods in the loan paperwork. Will I receive the deposit back when the agreement is cancelled, or would I lose that money? Aaron, whatever the terms and conditions of the actual company that you bought the product from's website says is what you should follow. So for example, if you bought it online, then you do have 14 days to declare that you want to refund something before another 14 days to actually return it to them for a full refund. You might have to pay for delivery, but it should be a full refund as long as you are returning it in the condition that you bought it in. For in-store purchases, by the way, they don't have that same obligation of 14 days, but most of them will have it. And most stores go above and beyond with, you know, 30 days refunds, et cetera, et cetera. I've seen some that give you like 1 year or 6 month refunds. So most places do offer it. If you return it within the store's policy, you will get a full refund, deposit and all. Next question from Verity, who said, what are ETFs? ETFs, great question. And I hope a lot of people are kind of like raising their hand and being like, I've got that same question. An ETF or an exchange traded fund should be at the top of your vocabulary if you have ever been interested in investing. Okay? So when it comes to investing, and I'm talking about retail investing, the investing that I love to talk about because this is one of the best places to put your long-term savings. A lot of people often think of individual companies like I want to invest in Apple or I want to invest in Tesla or I want to invest in Ralph Lauren. Don't ask me why I came up with them. But an ETF is an exchange traded fund, which is basically a pool. Take a pool of companies, mix them together based off maybe a country. So a pool of companies from America or the UK, or a pool of companies based on an industry. So from the energy industry or from the technology industry. Now, an exchange traded fund can be bought and sold like it was a one-off company, like you were buying a share or a fraction of a share from Apple, but you are buying an entire fund. So all of this group of companies with a click of one button. And what they do is they track what that fund does. If you're confused, let me give you an example. The S&P 500, yeah? That is a collection of the 500 biggest companies in the US split by weighting. So for example, let's say Apple make up 5% of that entire fund. The S&P 500 will be made up, 5% of it will be Apple, okay? So when you're buying an exchange traded fund, what you are buying is a fund that tracks the movement of the S&P 500, which is the kind of valuation of the top 500 companies in the US. And it's going to be split or made up weighting wise by how big those companies are inside the S&P 500. So like I said, if Apple makes up 5% of the entire like value of the 500 biggest companies in the US, when you buy £1 worth of an exchange traded fund that tracks the S&P 500, 5% of that £1, so 5p, will be buying into Apple shares. Now, why are exchange traded funds or ETFs such a valuable thing for you to know about? Well, there's such easy ways for you to buy collections of hundreds, if not thousands, of companies with a click of one button. Rather than trying to build portfolios that try and track a specific market or something like that, You can just buy the market through ETFs. And more investing platforms are making ETFs really, really simple to buy. So that's a great question and something that you should definitely look more into and more about. That comes to the end of this show. Sorry, I only got the chance to really answer two specific questions. But remember, you can always DM us on @thatmoneyshow. It's a really easy name to remember. @thatmoneyshow on Instagram, where you DM us any of your questions. Like I said, stupid, silly, clever, complicated, long, short. We will answer them on this show. You can also listen back to us on every podcasting platform. Personally, I am a bit more of a Spotify person, but I know some people listen on Apple Podcasts and some people listen on YouTube to their podcasts. So wherever you get it, we are there. You can listen to us, That Money Show, on every podcasting platform. But my favorite, you can listen to us live when you download the FUBAR Radio app. So FUBAR Radio, you can listen to the show live every single week at 4 p.m. I want to say a quick thank you to our guests, to Noah, who spoke to us all about young people, to Julianne from Creative Nature. I've been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And as promised, you are now better with your money.